You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. During the pandemic, the state DMV said 16 and 17-year-olds didn't have to take an actual driving test to get their licenses, just the written portion. Now the agency wants to make that change permanent. Our guest shares his concerns coming up. Now, in the next few weeks, you'll be able to go just about anywhere in Wisconsin without a mask. After the CDC released new guidance saying that fully vaccinated people can go mask-free in most public spaces, cities across the country scrambled to reassess their guidelines. Pretty much all mandates here in Wisconsin are either over or have an end date coming up in a couple weeks. We're talking about the lifting of mask mandates after over a year of wearing them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you excited about the new guidance from the CDC and the end of, or the upcoming end of, remaining mask mandates? Are there situations where you'll keep wearing your mask even after you're vaccinated? Do you have questions about when you might still need to wear that mask? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. It's going to feel weird to walk into a building without a mask. Dr. Ben Weston is an associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's also director of medical services for the Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management. Dr. Weston, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, a lot of the changes coming here in Wisconsin stem from the CDC guidance on mask wearing for people who are fully vaccinated. Can you talk about the decision and what it means?
Yeah, so what we saw from the CDC was basically that people who are fully vaccinated, so that means 2 weeks out from their final dose of vaccine, whether that's one dose or a two-dose vaccine, are safe to take their masks off in the vast majority of settings. And the science supports that. Now, the science shows that people who are vaccinated are at extremely low rate risk of getting the disease, and very low, nearly 100% protected from hospitalization or death from COVID. Now, the science also shows that transmission rates appear to also be lower. So even if you do happen to get infected after you're fully vaccinated, you're very unlikely to transmit. Now, one last point. What's key about the CDC guidelines is it's for vaccinated people. Mm-hmm. So folks who are unvaccinated and people who are otherwise at high risk still want to keep masking.
I want to stick with the vaccinated people for a moment. You mentioned the majority of situations they wouldn't wear a mask. Under these guidelines, where does the CDC say, hey, vaccinated people, we think you should probably keep wearing a mask?
Right. So certain higher risk situations. So a lot of transit, public transit on airplanes, things like that. Also in higher risk situations like healthcare settings, in hospitals and clinics. Those are the sort of settings where they say you still really ought to keep your mask on. And then, of course, certain states, localities, municipalities may still, or businesses for that matter, may still have policies, and those certainly should still be followed.
Right. And that's raised some concern. I know you don't know if that person, say, in the store you're running is vaccinated or not. So people are saying, How do I enforce a mask mandate in my store if I want to? How do I handle this? What are your thoughts on that concern about, you know, everybody might just stop wearing masks, vaccinated and unvaccinated alike?
It's a very legitimate concern. And to be honest, there's not a great answer to that right now. And that's one of the biggest challenges with when we see mask mandates being rescinded. Certainly people who are vaccinated are safe. Now, they may make different sort of decisions depending on what their risk tolerance is, depending on what their medical conditions are or who they live with. But that is one of the challenges. So, you know, when I enter a grocery store, when I went there 2 weeks ago, I felt pretty comfortable. And somebody who is, say, with children who can't be vaccinated or who's immunocompromised or who's receiving cancer treatment and can't actually get the vaccine, those few but real people who can't get the vaccine, you know, these are potentially going to be more dangerous situations for them to enter now.
Talking to Dr. Ben Weston from the Medical College of Wisconsin, looking at the end of mask mandates coming up for some communities in Wisconsin, already long gone in some others. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have questions about masks, when to wear them now, the science behind this, and your personal feelings. Will you be relieved when the time comes when you can take that mask off when you go into, say, the grocery store? Or is it going to feel weird? think it's going to feel kind of weird for me. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Paula is with us in Madison. Paula, hi.
Hi. Thanks. I'm glad to speak with you. My concern is, I understand I'm fully vaccinated, but I still have a 5% chance I could possibly get COVID, probably wouldn't have any symptoms. I'm like 74 and pretty healthy, but I'm very worried about my grandchildren who are not vaccinated. They're 8 and 11, and I'm still planning on wearing my mask pretty much. I don't wear it outside. I bike a lot and stuff, but inside I'm thinking I probably should keep wearing it. I'm not sure if you had any thoughts on that.
Paula, thanks a lot. You are not the only one asking you that question, I promise. Dr. Weston, there's this still unvaccinatable part of the population, age 11 and under. How do they factor in?
Right. Paula has a really important point and a really important question. So this is going to depend not only on risk tolerance of those who are vaccinated, but also what situation you have going on. So Paula said she's healthy. If Paula happened to be immunocompromised, she might be more worried about that 5%. So, you know, hopefully and probably if she got infected with the vaccine, she would do okay. She'd have minor symptoms, if symptoms at all, and would do just fine. But if she or somebody else has immunocompromised, they might not do as well. And so they have a higher risk of going out. Now, likewise, you also have to think about who else you're around. There's that 5% risk of getting infected and then the lower risk of transmission, but that might be too much risk for you to take if you have kids at home, let alone if you have kids at home who have illnesses, who have immunocompromised themselves or other family members. So it is going to depend, and I think that's where the risk tolerance comes in. Paula feels comfortable going for a bike ride outside without a mask. Absolutely a safe activity. She may not feel comfortable going to an indoor concert without a mask or an indoor exercise class without a mask, and that's okay. She doesn't need to, you know, it is, like you said, it's going to be hard for all of us to transition back to taking masks off. It feels weird after so many months of wearing them. But if you're not comfortable or if you feel that your situation is higher risk, it's okay to keep your mask on for now.
Thanks a lot for that call, Paula. And let's talk about the kids who are right now not able to get vaccines. The word all along, and I think the statistics bear this out, is the younger kids have been way less at risk from COVID, and the risks go up the older and older you get. So how worried are we about protecting, except obviously for the immunocompromised kids you mentioned, in general, how worried are we about kids in the current state of COVID?
So I think there's two considerations here. I think one is at the individual level and one is at the community level. So let me start with the community level. So this is where we talk about herd immunity, and this concept has gotten confused and trying to pinpoint a number. But the basic idea is the more people we can get vaccinated, the harder it is for this virus to spread. And so even if an individual child is not going to get terribly sick from COVID, they still can spread COVID, and they can spread it to others who can get much more sick. And so to decrease that spread, to make it so that that virus has nowhere to go, and the numbers start really decreasing, that's why we need to vaccinate as many people as possible, including children. Now, the second part of that equation is thinking about the child on an individual level. So if you have a young child and they get COVID and they're otherwise healthy, are they likely to get very sick? Frankly, no. The evidence tells us they're not likely to get very sick. They're probably not going to be hospitalized. They're probably not going to die from COVID. And that's obviously a good thing. But what worries me with my kids and with other kids is this is still a virus that we don't understand very well. We are learning things constantly about COVID, and there's a lot that we still don't know. And part of what we don't know are the long-term effects. We don't completely understand why it causes this multi-system inflammatory condition in some children. We don't understand why it causes heart failure in some adults and many young adults. We don't understand why it causes these chronic long-term lung conditions. And we also don't know what other things we're going to discover over time with the virus. There's plenty of viruses that reemerge later or cause long-term effects that we don't understand. And the last thing we want to do is have our children exposed to something like that. Now, briefly, that's in contrast to a vaccine that's been very well studied and based on very careful science and designed to not have these sort of long-term effects.
Let's go back to our callers now. Martha is with us in Rhinelander. Martha, hi.
Hi. I have some underlying conditions. I'm in my 60s. I'm a big vaccine proponent. my family and friends, we've all had both vaccines. What I'm wondering is, I hear once in a while, more often than I'm comfortable with, people who have gotten both vaccines still get COVID. How concerned should I be with my underlying conditions about going maskless? Because I've worn a mask for a year, no exception. And I'm not trying to throw rocks. I don't understand, you know, how that can happen. Should I be concerned?
Martha, thanks for the call. Dr. Weston.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Martha. And this gets back to what Paula brought up earlier as well, is that 5%. So the vaccines are extremely effective. But nonetheless, when you give it to hundreds of millions of people, there are going to be some breakthrough infections. That 5% does add up when you have many, many, many people. And so do you need to be worried? I think it depends on your health conditions. I would talk to your doctor about it. It depends how severely you could be affected if you got COVID. But I think you can feel comfortable knowing that the vaccine is protecting you. Now, the best example I've heard, and I can't say it's my own, it's from Dr. Osterholm, who is from University of Minnesota and does an outstanding job talking about COVID. He talked about, imagine the vaccine as a fireproof suit, and it's 95% effective. If I told you, here's a fireproof suit that's 95% protective, you're probably not going to walk into, you know, a 10-foot wall of flames in a house that's burning down. But you may be willing to walk into a grass fire knowing that you have 95% protection. And so, you know, that wall of flames may be your exercise class with nobody wearing masks, whereas the grass fire is, you know, an outdoor picnic. And so I think you have to think about the burden of disease in your community, the vaccination rate in your community, as well as your own personal risk tolerance. But the fact of the matter, Martha, is you've done what you can to protect yourself by getting vaccinated. That's what's most important. And your risk of disease, your risk of hospitalization, and certainly your risk of death are extremely low.
Martha, thanks for that call. We're talking to Dr. Ben Weston from the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We're looking at the end of mask mandates, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What are you excited about, worried about as we emerge from the pandemic? Fully vaccinated people, do you feel ready to get back to living your life? And give us a report on the state of mask wearing in your community. Are you still seeing lots of people wear them? The mandates are still in effect in some communities in the state. Did you never really see people wearing them? Was it uncommon to see masks out in the wild where you were? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Medical College of Wisconsin Associate Professor Dr. Ben Weston about COVID restrictions lifting across the state, mask mandates, even in places that still have them, wrapping up probably in a couple few weeks. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the latest CDC guidelines on mask wearing, especially for vaccinated people. Your questions about vaccination rates and how worried you are about COVID-19 in the future. And you can just tell us how you feel about the idea of going maskless in public places. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Weston, big picture and our worries now. It seems like we're getting enough people vaccinated that we're not going to have sort of the nightmare scenario nationwide that we had in January. But is there a concern, especially in counties, say communities with lower vaccine rates, of localized flare-ups like we saw in Michigan just, a month ago or so?
Yeah, I think there certainly is a concern. You know, the pandemic is, in the United States, moving in the right direction. We're seeing our trends improve, our case rates, our positivities. But we know that this pandemic is not over. It's not over on one hand because we don't have high enough rates of vaccination throughout the state, throughout the country, frankly, to really drive down the burden of disease as low as we need it to. It continues to be of concern as we look at these variants. Variants that in some cases increase transmissibility, in other cases increase severity. So we're not out of the woods yet, but the number one thing we can do to improve our trends and continue to see improvements is to get as many people as possible vaccinated.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Marinette County. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I've been really frustrated up here because it seems in this area it's political. Trying to see anyone wearing a mask was really difficult this winter. We went out for my birthday to have dinner, and there was a bar attached to the restaurant, and people were swarming all. There must have been 50, 60 people there in a very small area, you know, elbow to elbow. And I was the only one with a mask on. We turned around and came home.
Thank you for sharing that story. And this is not the only story that we've heard from the, like Lisa's, Dr. Weston, just some places and situations where people never bought into mask wearing. How big a problem has that been, Dr. Weston?
Well, it certainly has been a problem. And it's been challenging that since the very beginning of the pandemic, COVID has been political in the United States. But I think what helps us get beyond that is just simply looking at the facts. And the facts show us that COVID is not the flu. COVID is not the mild disease that's often talked about. Now, in a lot of people, they do just get mild disease. But before the vaccine came, certainly a lot of our older folks, a lot of our sicker folks, and even a lot of younger folks were getting very sick from COVID. And we've seen many, many people get hospitalized and die from COVID. And that has certainly been real for every family that's lost a loved one over the last 14, 16 months from COVID. The other facts that we know is that masks work. And the most important fact that we know is that vaccines work and that they're safe. They're safe and they're effective. And so the more people we can get vaccinated, the better. But certainly politics from the beginning have added challenges to the messaging and the progress on COVID.
Thanks a lot for that call. Let's go to Mark now in Black River Falls. Mark, hi.
Hello. How are you today?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Mark?
Well, a vaccine tricks your T cells into thinking that you've got a disease, a virus. And so if you catch the virus and recover from the virus, your T cells already know that, do they not?
Thanks for the call, Mark. So, yeah, if somebody has had, say, COVID, do they still need the vaccine? Dr. Weston, what are the recommendations?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mark, and it's one that comes up all the time. So certainly when you get infected with COVID, your body does build immunity. There's no doubt about it. Now, the challenge with the immunity from the natural infection of COVID is twofold. So the first challenge is that it seems to be far less predictable than the immunity that you get from the vaccine. In most people, it may last around 3 months. In some people, it may be stronger immunity than in others. Whereas the vaccine seems to provide very consistent immunity. We're more than 6 months out from the people who've gotten the first vaccinations, and they still have extremely strong immunity to COVID. So it gives you much more durable, long-lasting immunity, or at least it seems to, than getting naturally infected. Now, the other challenge, of course, is you have to go through that infection to get that immunity. So some people obviously have already been infected and they built some immunity, but we see many people who have gotten reinfected after that first infection. So the best way to build immunity and build long-lasting, durable immunity to protect yourself in the long term is by getting vaccinated, even if you've had the COVID infection.
Mark, thanks for the call. We'll go to Julia next in Oshkosh. Julia, hello.
Yes, hi. My question is twofold. One is the data does show that mask wearing has had an impact on other diseases such as flu. I think in the state of Wisconsin, we've had a rate of less than 1% of flu infections this season. Anecdotally, we hear that people's allergies are getting better, probably because they're wearing masks. So is there a way that we can shift our culture or our society to maybe adopt more of what, like, the Japanese do? Every winter, they wear masks. If somebody has a sniffle, they wear masks, you know, that respect for others. But can we mix maybe the sociological collective good angle with, hey, masks work also in preventing other diseases and deaths?
Julia, thanks a lot for the call. Masks, and let's key in on the flu influenza she brought up there, Dr. Weston. Is there something to be said for maybe throwing on a mask during flu season?
There's certainly something to be said there. And Julia hits on a point that is being discussed more and more, is what are the added benefits of wearing masks? Now, wearing masks in certain situations, I think, moving into the future, we certainly have seen a much lessened, much less severe flu season than any time in the recent past. And the thought is that a lot of that may be due to masking. There may be other factors at play. And so certainly we'll have to look into that and better understand the data and the research. But nonetheless, it seems like there are some benefits to masks, especially in higher risk settings. I'll tell you, you know, in the emergency department, we didn't used to wear a mask throughout the winter when seeing patients in the emergency department. Certain patients, of course, we would. But I think moving forward, some culture shifts are going to happen there. And I think they'll happen in other settings as well.
Thanks a lot for that call. So big picture again, Dr. Weston, what are you watching for now that we've got much better numbers on COVID rates and death rates and so on? But as you said earlier, we're not done with it yet. What are the next things you're watching for?
Well, I think we're seeing a shift in vaccination strategy now. So, you know, a month ago, we could open up our, and we did have our mass vaccination clinics open, and people would come to us, and they'd come to us by the hundreds or the thousands. That has shifted now. We're no longer seeing that group that is quite so eager and able to get vaccine as we did before. And so I think we have three groups left. One is people who just don't want to get the vaccine and will not get the vaccine. And that group hasn't shifted much. Now, luckily, those numbers are relatively low, somewhere between 10 and 15%. But what we're left with are groups that need a bit more information, often called the wait and see folks. And so we want to get that information out there to them so they're comfortable receiving the vaccine. And then we're seeing people with barriers, whether it's childcare, transportation, job barriers, whatever it is. And so we're working to make the vaccine easier for them to get. So that's really what we're working on right now, transitioning our strategy on vaccination with the goal of just continuing to get as many people protected, as many communities protected as possible.
Dr. Weston, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
That's Dr. Ben Weston, Associate Professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin, also Director of Medical Services for the Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management. He joined us for a look at the end of mask mandates. Coming up, the Wisconsin DMV says teens should no longer have to take the road test to get their driver's license. Good or bad idea? We'll take a look at it and you can share your thoughts. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, how many tries did it take you to pass the road test to get your driver's license? Most teens these days are pretty good at it. In fact, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation says in 2019, 84% of 16 and 17-year-olds passed it on their first attempt. So when COVID-19 hit and caused the state to shut down, the Department of Motor Vehicles was looking for ways to avoid a huge backlog in driving tests. Since teens were having not much trouble passing it anyway, administrators said they didn't have to take it. They'd still have to pass the written test and meet some other requirements to legally drive, but none of those parallel parking, merging on the highway, or checking mirror tests. Instead, a parent would sign a waiver. Well, now there's talk of making that temporary change permanent. That would need to be approved by the legislature. It's included in Governor Evers' proposed budget. Our next guest, though, has some concerns about this approach. You could join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Should 16 and 17-year-olds have to pass the road test to get their driver's license, or does it make sense to waive that requirement? Do you trust parents to make the final call on whether their teenage kids can legally drive? Does it make you worry when you're on the road? If you're a parent, what do you want to see happen? And as a young driver or parent thereof, were you one of the people who did this, got the driver's license, the graduated driver's license, without the road test last year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Earlier this week, the morning show talked to Christina Boardman, DMV Administrator for the DOT. Today, we've got Nick Jarmus, Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. Nick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
What concerns do you have about this idea of waiving the road test?
Well, you know, the road test has been a part of the process for a long time, and we think it's a crucial final evaluation that needs to be administered as a standardized test at the state level to really make sure that before a teen gets that license, they have satisfactorily acquired all the skills that are needed. Parents certainly have a role to play in preparing their teens for the road and determining whether their teens are ready to take the test. But we don't think that it should be up to the parents to decide whether or not they can waive that test.
What kind of things do young new drivers tend to have trouble with in the early days of their driving, or maybe even things that get them dinged in that road test in the first place?
Well, the biggest issue with teens is even though they do well on their road test, but they run into issues with inexperience behind the wheel, and then any sort of risk factors that they may layer on top of that. That, you know, aren't necessarily exclusive just to teens, whether it's, you know, using their phone or being distracted or even possibly being intoxicated or even just being impaired from fatigue, you know, being overtired while they're driving. Those factors exacerbate the inexperience behind the wheel, which is why teens have such an elevated risk for crash compared to all other age groups.
Now, this initial idea was, okay, hey, we've got this pandemic. We can't coop up driving instructors and the kids in the car together for the test. Did you think this was okay as a temporary measure?
Well, you know, it was a less than ideal solution, but it was a less than ideal situation by any measure. We certainly understood the position that DMVs were in across the country at the time. You know, there were teens that needed to get their test, you know, license, you know, for very practical, legitimate reasons, and it would negatively impact them and their families if they weren't able to, but it simply wasn't safe to administer the test the way we historically have. So it was okay, we think, for this to be done on a temporary basis because of the emergency conditions, but we do think it should be sunsetted, and we should go back to the way we have done it historically.
Now, the DMV is saying, hey, even without the road test, there's a pretty high bar for teens to get the license. I want to give a listen to DMV Administrator Christina Boardman on WPR's The Morning Show. This was Tuesday of this week.
We know that if you are participating in classroom, you're participating behind the wheel with a trained instructor, and you are purposely and having those 30 plus hours with your parents in a variety of conditions, and you've had at least 6 months of practice, we feel that says a lot, and that parent is in a great position with all of that time that they've logged in the car to make that decision.
So behind the wheel with a trained instructor, a lot more going on. Is the road test just a formality at that point?
Well, we don't think so. And I you know, we've worked with DOT on a number of issues in the past. And, you know, I certainly don't want to be critical of them. I understand where they're coming from with this. But we do believe that it needs to be sort of a fail-safe system. And AAA is as a company, we've operated drivers education programs. We've administered behind the wheel programs ourselves. Well, we just launched our own online driver's ed classroom portion that teens can begin taking. So, you know, we appreciate the confidence that there is in these programs, and we would agree that schools, both ourselves as well as our colleagues across the state that are administering these education programs, are doing a great job. But we do think that there should still be that objective fail-safe system on the other end of things, that you know, it shouldn't be the same people teaching that are administering and scoring in the final evaluation.
We're talking to Nick Jarmus, Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. We are talking about the idea of getting rid of the road test for 16 and 17-year-old drivers. It was done away with temporarily on account of COVID-19. They're talking about maybe making that permanent. Nick doesn't like the idea. What do you think? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, especially, you know, if you're listening, if you're a parent or a kid who did this without the road test. Love to hear your experience at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Bill is with us in Richland Center. Bill, hi.
Hello.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, I definitely am vehemently opposed to not having a driver's test. I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I see the results of it every day of young people not being prepared to be out on the road. They drive too fast for conditions. They don't leave enough space between themselves and other vehicles. If it rains, they don't even know enough to turn on their headlights in the rain or fog or snow. And I think they need much more preparation to be on the road. Another big thing is that all vehicles should have to have reflective vests within the vehicle in case there is trouble with the car. They don't turn on their emergency flashers, and they walk around like they're on the whole road when they're trying to change a tire. And we wonder how come people get ran into, even police vehicles get hit by other cars because nobody will slow down for the situation.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Bill's worried about the quality of youth driving, Nick, even under the current or the previous rules.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Bill's perspective is really interesting, and it highlights the fact that this isn't just an issue that concerns teens and their parents. You know, we all share the road with teen drivers. And so this is a public safety issue. This is an issue that is, you know, again, reinforces why this shouldn't simply be left as a decision up to each individual families. There certainly is a public interest for the state at stake to make sure that they are administering a final evaluation.
Thanks a lot, Bill, for sharing your experiences on the road with us. We'll go to Annie now in Winneconne. Annie, hello. Are you there, Annie?
Hello.
Yep, you're on the air, Annie. Go for it.
Oh, I am. Okay. I'm a 71-year-old grandmother, and I have a grandson who will be driving soon. I think when children have to take a road test with someone who is not mom or dad, someone who has some kind of elevated position, either with the DMV or maybe they're in the police department, that makes that road test that much more important for the kid to prepare for. And I don't think kids have the judgment, and frankly, some parents these days might not have the best judgment in putting their kids out there behind the wheel. I see a lot of kids, as the previous caller mentioned, not doing the best driving. And I think I, as a driver, would feel safer if I knew that they had to pass a standard type of road test that was made for everyone.
Annie, thanks a lot for that call. So the road test kind of ups the seriousness of the whole thing for kids, she says, Nick.
I think that's a really good point. You know, it's good to know that the teens are coming in, you know, historically have been coming into the test so well prepared. But the fact that that's been the case in the past doesn't mean that if we remove that, you know, final test that they need to be prepared for, that they'll continue to be that well prepared if that test is waived.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about whether teenagers in Wisconsin, 16 and 17-year-olds in particular, should have to pass the driving test in order to get their licenses. Nick Jarmus is Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the traditional road test be required for these young new drivers? Or is there plenty of other stuff going on? Parents can be a good judge of this. Do you think it's okay to waive that road test? Did you get your driver's license, or maybe did your kid in this stretch because of the pandemic where you didn't have to have that road test? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about whether teenagers should have to pass a road test before getting their driver's license. The state DMV waived that requirement during the pandemic to avoid a big backlog of tests. Now they want to make the change permanent for 16 and 17-year-olds. They say most teens by far pass the test on the first try anyway, and say there's still a high bar for them to clear in order to legally drive. A parent will also need to sign off on this. Nick Jarmus stays with us, Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin, and you can join in with your thoughts and or experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Lucas is with us in Appleton. Lucas, hi.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Lucas?
Yeah, so I didn't grow up in Wisconsin. I grew up in the South, and in Tennessee, you had an option where you could either take a quick test with the DMV, you do the written test and then the driver's test at the DMV, or you could do a written test and then kind of a class that was more of a long, drawn-out driver's test, and it lasted 2 weeks so that the driving instructor could actually see you in multiple different types of scenarios. And I feel like that was a better option for me than doing the one time at the DMV, because you kind of, it's a crapshoot of what the weather is going to be like that day or who you get stuck with to actually administer the test. So I feel like not doing the test at the DMV was a better option.
I want to ask Lucas, so in this 2-week class, was this all in a classroom or are you actually out on the road driving too?
So we did, it was longer than 2 weeks because it was part of school.
Okay.
But it was 2 weeks in a classroom and then 2 weeks of driving.
Okay.
So it ended up being 4 weeks.
But no final exam of driving and being evaluated on it, it sounds like, if I have this right, Lucas.
No, as you drove for those 2 weeks, that was your exam.
Got it. All right, Nick, what do you think? I mean, that's kind of what this would end up being like in Wisconsin. You'd have this driving instructor with you while you're doing the training, but not have that final road test.
Without knowing the exact specifics of the state we're referring to here, I mean, I think the question is still whether there's a third party doing as some sort of an evaluation versus just leaving it up to the parents. Now, granted, they do still have to pass driver's ed, so the instructor will still have some input on it. But ultimately, you know, the decision is left up to the parents themselves. And I think that's still a little bit different than what the caller was referring to.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. We've got Kate with us in Hortonville. Kate, hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
What did you want to tell us about, Kate?
Well, I wanted to share our experience. Our daughter is 16, and she opted to omit the standard test. And she has really found that it's helped her significantly. It's lessened the stress and anxiety that, you know, taking this big driver's test away. It's been really lovely for her. She's spent more time behind the wheel with her family. She's spent more time behind the wheel with her driver's instructor. She's had more experience in different scenarios. Roundabouts in Wisconsin are really tricky, so she doesn't have that big anxiety about, one test that she can anticipate the whole route for. So it's been really great, and I foresee it being a great option for kids in the future.
Kate, thanks a lot for that call. So at least one user of this experience, Nick, liked how it came out.
Yeah, I think I would suggest, though, that, it doesn't have to be either or, at least the way the caller presented it. I mean, we encourage, parents to do as much behind the wheel practice with their teen as possible. I mean, the state currently mandates 30 hours. There's legislation currently being voted on that we're supporting that would increase it to 50 hours. But we think it should be as much as you can and expose your teen to as many different scenarios behind the wheel, as many different types of driving environments behind the wheel before they get their license and end up having to encounter those things on their own. But we still think, there still should be that objective final evaluation before you cross over from, having your permit to getting your license.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Nick Jarmus is with us from AAA Wisconsin, looking at the idea of ending the road test for 16 and 17-year-old aspiring drivers, temporarily waived during the COVID pandemic. The talk of making that permanent now. We heard from Ryland on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who says we should move closer to what Canada does, multiple road tests months apart, so you get tested in different weather. As time goes on, you should be getting better. Our current road test is too easy, Ryland says. And one of our callers mentioned something along those lines, the idea of, getting to see different weather. What do you think of that idea, Nick? That would be kind of moving in the opposite direction of what we're talking about here.
Well, it's an interesting idea. And I think it highlights a couple of points that we actually have been making in advocating for the legislative change regarding the 50 hours. And the other part of that bill that increases it to 50 hours actually lowers the permit age to 15 instead of 15 and a half. So currently you can get your permit at 15 and a half, and then you're eligible to get your license at 16. This legislation would change it so that you're getting your permit at 15 and you have a full year to hold it before you're eligible to get your license. And the benefit of that is exactly as that commenter said, you get the full spectrum of weather, which Wisconsin gets pretty similar weather to Canada. And so we want to make sure that teens have as much experience in different environments, including different weather conditions, before they get their test.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is with us in Wanakee. Tom, hi.
Hello. I'd like to ask if the DMV has done analysis of the drivers that have not had a road test versus drivers that have had the road test in recent times, and look at accidents or citations and warnings in that first year since we're in COVID. So if this has been for a year and a half or 15 months, take a comparable period and do a comparison.
Oh, interesting, Tom. Thanks for the call. Do we have any data like that, Nick?
You know, I don't know, but I think, you know, any data that we have from the past year, there's so many caveats to it just because this was such a different environment in terms of driving. I mean, we saw traffic volumes plummeting to 50-60% below normal volumes at points during the course of 2020. So driving in that environment, not the same as driving and not the same sort of risks, although we did see fatalities go up largely because people were speeding more during that time period. But I think trying to look at 2020 data is going to present a lot of challenges moving forward in a lot of different areas because it was such a unique year in terms of what the roads look like.
Thanks for that call. CJ joins us next in Madison. CJ, hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I do have a commercial driver's license, and I do drive a lot on the highways, and I'm shocked at the aggressiveness just in the common public. And as a parent, I would require my kids, and I'm glad they did have the pressure of being prepared for a driver's test. I don't know. I'm shocked that the insurance industry, you know, hasn't pressed for this because I'm concerned about the safety, not only for the kids, but everybody else on the highway. And Tom did ask a question that I had, you know, if there is any data of the results of this trial, because I'm surprised that the long-term results wouldn't show that, you know, the safety factor of these kids being pressed to be prepared wouldn't show.
CJ, thanks a lot for the call. Nick, CJ, worried as others are about the safety impacts of not having this road test.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of that experience and knowing that they're checking all those boxes. I apologize, my network kind of cut out a little bit during his comments, but you know, that certainly is a big concern for us. Teens have that elevated crash risk. You just look at the statistical, you know, tables and you see that, especially at, you know, 16, 17, that's when they're at their highest risk for being in a crash and being injured or killed in a crash. And I think we really need to make safety the number one priority.
Thanks a lot for that call. You know, as we get on the road more and more, Nick, and start driving more as the pandemic winds down, leave us with a quick safety message for drivers of all ages in our last half a minute or so.
You know, it's really up to each and every one of us. You know, we support the Vision Zero concept that we can get to zero crashes on the road. That's really the only number that's acceptable, that's worth celebrating, because almost every crash is preventable. As long as we're all paying attention, doing our part to be as safe as we can every time that we go out, every driver.
Nick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Nick Jarmus is the Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. We talked to him today about the state DMV's plan to waive the road test requirement for 16 and 17-year-old drivers. The idea would have to be approved by the state legislature. It's included in Governor Evers' proposed state budget, and it was happening on a temporary basis because of COVID already. You can still share your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7, the Milwaukee Bucks are in the NBA playoffs. A sports writer joins the show with a look at their chances. That's tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll find out how cheating at school has increased during the pandemic and what educators are trying to do about it. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.